Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. This week on the pod, we are breaking down all the action from regionals and looking ahead to the Supers. Let's talk college baseball. Take a deep breath, Kyle. We made it through regional weekend, and man, it was wild.
Yeah, I sweated a lot in College Station. I was in the press box there for 2 out of the 3 days, and then the third day I was relegated to the overflow zone at there, and it was just outside in the elements, and luckily it was a night game, but man, it was hot.
Yeah, and it's gonna be even worse in College Station this next week, and I was seeing that it's supposed to be like 105 or something, so that time of year for college baseball.
Yeah, you can call me soft, but I am not going back in the heat for that one. I'm going to stay inside in the AC.
So, that's a great action from the regionals. Let's start with controversy. You want to talk about the controversy that happened in the Louisville regional and the controversy in the College Park regional?
Yeah, I don't understand one of them, but I think I understand the first one. So go ahead.
All right, I'll get you there then. So let's start with Louisville. So Louisville is playing Michigan in a game 7. Louisville knocked off Michigan in game 6. So they came back on Monday for the final game of that series. And it was a play at second base. And that's kind of where it all started. It was a 9-7 game. A play at second base led to a little bit of a controversial call. You could see the runner going into second base, originally called safe on the field, but upon further review, you can see his fingertips being pushed up likely by the tag being applied to the fingers, or otherwise his fingers were just doing some weird magic flex stuff in the middle of the play. But there was apparently not enough evidence to overturn that call. He was called safe. Then Levi Usher comes up next, and Levi Usher is not a guy. He went up next, drove in two runners, both Dalton Rushing and Jack Payton, with a single out into center field, tied the game before Cameron Masterman, one of the absolute beasts of Louisville's lineup, hit a two-run shot over the left field wall to give Louisville an 11-9 lead that stuck. So 4 runs scored there, probably shouldn't have happened. What's your take on this? Is this was Michigan screwed out of a super regional?
I mean, we know Louisville's offense is really, really good, so they probably still would have scored, but they were, I mean, yeah, that was the NCAA really messed up that call pretty bad. Of the many other calls, it seems like that were messed up over the weekend. Just a lot of balls and strikes. It seems like the umps were getting tired and ready to go. But this one seems pretty blatant. Like, what's the point of overview or review if it doesn't? I don't know. You can see the hand coming up, but
making it worse, there were 2 outs, so that would have been the 3rd out. So they would not have scored in that inning had they gotten that tag call right. So they would have had a bottom of the 9th. That did not end up happening. So I think that I'm of two minds of this, but I'm of the predominant opinion Michigan did get screwed here. Same time, like, I mean, if you're Cameron Masterman coming up and you get this extra at bat, you're not just going to be like, oh, I'm not going to try now because that was a bad call. Like, right. Like, he still had to go and hit that home run. And same with Levi Usher, still had to hit that single before him. So, I mean, the player still performed. So credit to Louisville for taking advantage of the situation, but they shouldn't have had that opportunity. Let's have College Park. College Park, Big Ten Player of the Year Chris Ayeen was running down the first base line, runs in to UConn first baseman, called out on obstruction on that play. That really sucked the life out of the whole comeback for Maryland. Maryland had gone down in that game as much as 9-1, and they had pulled it all the way back to 10-8 at that point, and we're trying to get a little bit of a rally going there. But umpire called Ayeen out, and that was a little bit of a rally killer for Maryland.
Yeah, it looks like that play, that was with one out, and it scored a run anyway, because the runner was coming home, is on third. So it seems like they really messed this one up, or it's just a really bad rule.
That did not actually score a run on that play because with the obstruction, the runner was not allowed to advance.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So they should have scored. Yeah, it should have been 10-9 with a runner on first.
Yeah. Had
that play gone the other way with only one out.
Well, so it seems like it's a really bad rule then, because the runner is going in his lane, going.
Yeah, break it down for us. Talk a little bit.
So I'm watching it now. I watched it a lot over the weekend because I was just trying to understand it because I was very confused. So the runner is running from home to first exactly on the line.
Yeah.
He kind of wavered a little bit at the very beginning, like everyone does, because you start in foul territory and then you kind of go in, and he runs along the foul line towards first base, which is how you get there. It is a straight line. He was running on the line, touched the base. The pitcher went into foul territory with the ball. He grabbed it from fair territory and threw it across, like essentially across the base. And the first baseman was standing right in the middle of the bag, reaching across the runner coming into first. And the runner hit him because the ball was like thrown poorly. And then the runner was called out? ?
Here's my understanding was that Ayin established his running lane as in foul territory and crossed into fair territory at the end, which was breaking his runner's lane, which by the letter of the law, the rule then allows the umpire to call him out or to call him under obstruction, but only if there is an egregious interference on the play. So it's still a judgment call. It's not like he has to be guaranteed be called out if he crosses into fair territory. And ultimately, the first base umpire called him safe. The home plate umpire came in and said, no, he crossed into fair territory, leaving his lane and prevented the first baseman from making the catch. So it's a judgment call. I don't think it's a judgment call that many people agree with, because it looks like he had the throw beat. There wasn't much of a throwing lane there because of just where the ball ended up. So I just don't think that this is a call that needed to be made. And I'm on Team Maryland on this one. I think the umps got both these calls wrong.
Yeah, it seems like the pitcher, or like the first baseman, could have gone on the foul side of first base, and the pitcher could have thrown it on that side, and it would have made it a lot clearer. Yeah. He might have even gotten the ball in there.
I agree. I feel like if the first baseman was like in a stretch or something like that, and then the runner like, you know, knocks him down mid stretch, reaching out for the ball, like, but no, like this was just
it was a bad throw.
Yeah.
That like pulled the first baseman over. Yeah.
It was a botched play. This was not going to be like an easy out by any means for UConn.
Yeah. Well, I understand it. And now I feel even more bad because I don't know. It's unfortunate that it came down that way.
Yeah, and then they showed gratuitous shots of the home crowd in College Park, and very entertaining. Maryland,
I didn't
fans,
see that.
Maryland fans. I mean, if you're even a novice lip reader, you can see the fans did not love it. There was like chants with profanity for like the rest of the game, basically like refs, you suck, but worse. Maryland fans really gave it to them. Credit to Maryland. College Park had a much better regional atmosphere than I thought they would.
I saw when the game ended, or I guess I heard when the game ended, there were just boos and stuff the entire.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah. UConn is storming the mound, and there's just booing.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I'm guessing they were booing just like the refs and the fact that they felt like they got screwed. But
for sure, it was definitely the umps. I don't think that you blame the players.
Umps? Did I say refs?
You did. Yeah. But this is here's my first big question of the podcast. Do we need to change replay in college baseball? Like, is the threshold of what is considered to be enough evidence to overturn a call too high? Do we need to lower that threshold, or do we need to get rid of replay? Because at this point, it's such a small fraction of replays actually lead to changing of calls.
Yeah, I would want to see if there's any like stat about it, but it's just kind of based on feel. It feels like hardly any of them get changed. So yeah, maybe I don't know. I've always thought that there doesn't need to be a call on the field, like just ignore the call on the field and make the call from video evidence. I've always thought that in football, I thought that in baseball too. Maybe that's hard to do because sometimes it's really hard to tell from video, and the videos aren't always good. Like, you don't have a consistent, not every school can have all the camera angles that
but like, for the NCAA tournament, we can get it right.
Yeah, I think you're right, but yeah, okay. I don't know.
But
I think you're right. Maybe we need to lower the threshold, or just don't force there to be a call on the field. Like, I can just like throw up his hand and be like, I don't know, sorry.
I think that's the thing, is that with our current way we're doing umpiring, it won't work how you're describing. Because if you say like, okay, hey, replay review, ignore the call on the field, and then you see ump in frame going safe or something like that,
yeah.
Then it's very clear what the call on the field was. So like, I think that like, if there's going to be a replay thing like that, I think there could be, maybe should be an option for an ump to say like 50-50 call and just immediately send it to review. But that's going to take a lot on an ump to be able to do that. There are those times though, like I think where it would be best would be like, you know, those times when there's a judgment call, an ump makes a call, and then they gather all the umpires in together. I feel like if in that little conference, the umps could all say, hey, you know, we're not super confident, we're going to just say no call on the field and let replay decide it. Like, and let replay know that. I feel like something like that could work for like those, like for Ayin running into first base for Maryland. I could just be like, there's a confusion on the play, we aren't quite sure. Hey, Central Review in Pittsburgh, tell us what you think the best result is here.
Is that where the review is?
I think it's Pittsburgh for the NCAA.
Oh, cool.
All right. Next up on the podcast, let's talk about, let's leave the world of controversy and enter the world of just absolute chaos. I mean, I think I don't know a better way to describe what happened in Stillwater or what happened in Hattiesburg. Oklahoma State in the Stillwater regional was all but eliminated. It felt like multiple times in that regional. They were down 12-0 against Missouri State, ended up scoring 29 runs in that game. So they were able to come back and win that. That was an elimination game after Arkansas had knocked them off. Arkansas had their own comeback of their own in that game. And then in the first of the regional final matchup, so the game 6 of that regional, Oklahoma State had to come back against Arkansas, forcing a decisive game 7, which was, relatively speaking, a low scoring kind of casual affair for the Stillwater regional.
Yeah. 7-3 doesn't feel like it usually is, but coming from like a 51 out, like scoring output in one game. And yeah, it's what a blast. There were several times watching that. I mean, I was like refreshing it constantly because while I was at the games in College Station, and I would look up for an inning, watch the game, and then look down, and it would be like 8 more runs have been scored on either side. And it's, I was just like, oh yeah, look, this blowout is happening. It's Oklahoma State's going to lose. And it's like, oh wow, Oklahoma State's now blowing them out. It's, yeah, it's whenever you can have a fun game like that where it's back and forth and there's basically no pitching, it's really fun. Unless that there's evidence of like juiced balls and stuff, but I think we can maybe put that off until after the postseason. I don't know.
Yeah, I really much enjoyed watching the Stillwater regional. I think Griffin Dorsching had some huge hits for Oklahoma State. I think that Rock Riggio really announced himself on the national stage. So he's a freshman there that is, I think, going to get drafted pretty high in a couple of years. He did not make any fans in Fayetteville.
No.
Tiptoeing around the bases and what ended up being an Oklahoma State loss. He had a couple of huge hits. It all kind of came to a culmination in the 8th inning, bases loaded, of that last game, that game 7, when Oklahoma State still had a chance to win that game. And he's up to bat, 2 outs, bases loaded, and he strikes out. Hagen Smith gets the better of him. And then after that game, you can just see him like destroying like a helmet or something like that in the dugout. Like, he is a hot-headed kid. But I don't know. Like, I get that like what he did was like, I don't know. We'll get back to this maybe a little bit later about villains in college baseball. But I enjoyed his antics. Like, I think he's a good enough player. He can pull that off. And like, he's got to be able to take his punches whenever he loses. But like, I found him entertaining.
Yeah, he's maybe he's kind of one of those players that you're like, the lad, he's on your team if you're an Oklahoma State fan, but other, you, like, you acknowledge that other players, other teams, like, and fans hate him.
Yeah.
Like, I can't think of the word I'm trying to say, but, like, yeah, he's fun to watch as a neutral fan, I guess.
I think that I found him very entertaining. But he did not get the last laugh in that. Arkansas advances, seems to be playing a little bit up to the level that we expected from them in the preseason, and definitely has put to bed that 0-2 performance in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, what a moment from that for Hagan Smith in that, like, with the bases loaded strikeout of the hottest hitter. I mean, Rock Ridge, like you said, that for a freshman too, like that was just a really cool moment for step up, for maybe gives some Arkansas fans some confidence in their bullpen, and more confidence, I guess, in their bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, he is a starter for them, so, like, it's one of those situations where,
oh, true.
I don't know, like, he was only a bullpen guy because of everyone becomes a bullpen guy in a regional.
yeah.
I mean, he's only 18, so he'll be there for a little while in Fayetteville. So definitely a huge moment for Hagan Smith. Let's move now on to the Hattiesburg regional, because a lot of drama there too. USM, Southern Miss blew a lead against LSU in the 1-0 game there. Had to go all the way through then the loser's bracket, forced a game 7, and was able to score in the top of the 9th, sack fly, hold on for a win against LSU. So first off, LSU came back from, was it 8 runs down and 5 runs down in the first 2 games of that regional. So, like, LSU just totally felt like a team of destiny at that point. Like, it just felt like the offense was unstoppable. Who cares if they don't have the pitching depth, because the offense is going to be able to get it done. And that was not true. Southern Miss came all the way. I am shocked. I still don't believe that. Like, I did not, like, I thought for sure Southern Miss was losing that after they lost that, like, gut-wrenching game. So, like, credit to Southern Miss.
Yeah, it felt like this was LSU's regional to win after they put up a 10 spot in the bottom of the 8th. Yeah, just like, well, they're, yeah, like you said, team of destiny. They're always kind of squirrely, and they always pull out this magic stuff and in postseason, especially not at their home, but usually at Alex Box. This was just actually a really fun and pretty tight regional all around. Like, Southern Miss only won one game by more than 2 runs, and it was the first elimination, the elimination game for them, and when LSU was undefeated, they hadn't beat them twice. It was 8-4. Yeah. But I guess credit Southern Miss pitching for keeping it together just long enough for
You knew that Southern Miss pitching was going to keep them at least in it, but you just weren't quite sure how much they could do with a Kay Doty back in the lineup and Jacob Berry back in the lineup for LSU. Their offense is obviously really good even without them, but they got those guys back. Maybe kind of going a little bit under the radar, Southern Miss's offense actually got healthy right before this regional, so they were a better team than what we'd seen from them in the last few weeks. So this was just kind of like 2 really good teams going at relatively full strength against each other, which is just exactly what you want in a regional. So, like, it was just an awesome finish in Hattiesburg.
Yeah, it was strength on strength too, which is pretty cool.
And the old adage holds up: pitching carries you in the postseason, and Southern Miss's pitching did the job.
I guess so.
Let's take a few other peeks around some of the other regionals, some of the other storylines there. The Blacksburg regional was guaranteed to give us a first time ever super regional team. So you knew something special was going to happen. Virginia Tech swept through that regional, so they advanced to their first ever super and will now try to make the College World Series. Places where the old pitching adage didn't really hold up include places like College Station, where the Aggies just blasted their way past the rival TCU in that game 6 of that one. Lots of lead changes late there. I mean, Kyle, must have been really fun in College Station in that game 6. There was, what, 3 or 4 lead changes from the 7th inning on in that game until A&M finally kind of put it out of reach in the top of the 9th.
Yeah, that was a 3-2 game going into the 7th, and it ended up 15-9. So that tells you what went on in the last few innings. I think Aggie fans were feeling real confident after the top of the 7th when they went up 7-3. They said, they're like, well, our bullpen is kind of the strong suit of our pitching areas, but then they let up four in the bottom of the seventh to tie it at seven, and then went back on top. And yeah, like you said, just a lot of lead changes, and it was I don't know, a really fun night just overall, like a lot of really good baseball, and there was a lot of chirping in the stands, if you can imagine, two rivals.
Yeah, definitely. Especially only what 3-4 hour drive away from Fort Worth. So TCU did a good job showing up, but A&M came ready to host a regional. I think it was top five ever crowd at a postseason game for College Station. So they did a really nice job in that and stepping up to the plate. Let's move over now to the Stanford regional, where Stanford had to come out of the loser's bracket. And this is kind of a recurring theme. A lot of these one seeds had to come out of the loser's bracket. Stanford, Texas State ended up playing game seven late into Monday night. And 1-1 tie heading into the ninth, which is just love it. You love to see that game seven of a regional, and somehow you're at a 1-1 tie. And the reason why it was a big part of that is the ridiculous performance by Tristan Stivers from Texas State. This guy's your closer. He had one start on his career. He throws seven innings, one run. Slider was just devastating against a Stanford lineup that had not been quieted very much this season. And he put the team on his back.
Yeah, he really did. And I mean, also credits Stanford pitching for limiting Texas State. They have a pretty good offense to themselves, and that's why they got this far. But so it was a really fun back and forth game. I mean, it really tense, like 1-1 pitching duel, but like, I don't know, fun and stressful going into a pretty electric ninth.
Yeah, that ninth inning, it was just like it often happens in the ends of games when teams start to run out of pitching, things got really wild. So it was actually Brady Montgomery, the freshman up for Stanford, who came in to pitch in the eighth, got one scoreless inning, but gave up a couple runs in the ninth. And it was
the curse of the podcast interviewer.
Well, I mean, he had a pretty good weekend on.
Yeah.
So batting in the four hole. So he's a two-way guy. But one of the kind of tricky things about bringing in a guy like him is that you lose your DH spot. And so losing that DH spot actually ended up setting up one of the most ridiculous finishes, in my opinion, to a regional. So bottom of the ninth, 3-1 game. First thing that Stanford does, back-to-back jacks by Drew Bowser and Tommy Troy to tie the game at three. Next guy up, Eddie Park, gets a single. He finished the regional 10 for his last 11.
Like, that was wild.
That is unheard of. He raised his batting average like 40 points or something in the regional, which is like, that's not when your batting average is supposed to shoot up. You're supposed to do that in like the, you know, midweek scrub games or whatever.
And like, was it a lot of singles, or was he hitting extra bases too?
He's not a huge power guy. Mm-hmm. So I don't actually know what it all looked like, but he's a speed contact guy for sure. But he gets on first, makes it over to second, so they intentionally walk Brock Jones to flip the order over, and then the next up in the lineup is the DH spot, which they now have to fill with a pinch hitter. So they put in freshman Trevor Haskins, who has 12 at-bats on his entire college career. He did get the start the day before, so I mean, he's not totally cold, but coming in ninth inning tie game, first and second, so they sacrificed Park over to second. So now there's one out in the inning. So I think I'm sure it's not what he's thinking, but what the fans are thinking there is, don't hit into a double play. At least, you know, like, let the lineup turn over to the 3-4 hole. He has just an absolute battle of an at-bat, fouls off a bunch of pitches, wild pitch makes it second and third. And all of a sudden, any sort of knock in the outfield or maybe a slow ground ball can win the game. But he does one better, hits a single out into left field, and Trevor Haskins, in his 13th official at-bat on the season, walks off Texas State and sends Stanford into the Supers.
Yeah, that that is a like stepping up and when you need it, like with barely any experience. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yeah, and like add a little extra feel good to this story. He grew up 20 minutes away from Stanford. So local kid, probably went to Stanford games as a kid. So he's a guy who's invested in the program, invested in Stanford, and he gets to have a moment that he'll never forget. And maybe he earned himself some playing time in the Super.
Yeah, yeah. Storylines you love to see in regionals like that.
Yeah, really, really fun moment there. I want to touch on one last moment from the regionals, and that's what actually happened very early on in the Corvallis regional, because I think this is just the epitome of what college baseball and what baseball is about. Ian Mejia for New Mexico State, a New Mexico State team that had to win a WAC tournament to get in, had a not a great year by their standards, but made it to the postseason. Ian Mejia throws 124 pitches in game one and leaves the game against Oregon State tied. He gets a standing ovation from the fans in Corvallis, which are obviously mostly Oregon State fans. I mean, that was just a really special moment. He gives it a little tip of the hat to the home fans. But just one of those moments of just like Oregon State, I mean, they're a passionate fan base and they can kind of get heated, but it's just like, they get it. I don't know. They've seen great pitching performances. They know what it takes to win regionals and supers and college World Series, right? And they just see a guy who has had just absolute pitching performance of his entire career. And so they give him a standing ovation. That was a pretty special moment.
Yeah, hats off to Oregon State fans for that.
Yeah, they went up a notch or two in my home crowd ratings for sure with that moment. Just that whole like real, recognize real. Like, yeah, we get it. You might send us to the loser's bracket here, but I mean, we did it against a guy who just gave it his absolute all.
Now on the other end of that, we got villains.
Yeah. Oregon State did not play the role of a villain this weekend, but we talked about Rock Riggio. He was the villain in the Stillwater Regional. Who is the biggest villain remaining, in your opinion, in the tournament heading into the Supers? Who's the guy that like, who's a team that teams wouldn't mind seeing them lose? I think Vanderbilt was a little bit of that because of the Whistler. So I think everyone just realized that we're not going to have the Whistler in Omaha when Oregon State eliminated them. So that's a fun thing.
I mean, I guess he could still travel there, or they could still travel there. There's a few of them, but yeah, I kind of doubt they would. I don't know. Yeah. So there's a few options in my mind. You had mentioned this before. There's like the blue blood teams. There's not that many of them in this super regional round, which is actually really cool. There's only four of the 12 teams that have actually won a national title at all. And Texas is one of those. They have the second most overall. I think it's six. So a lot of people are probably rooting for ECU in that series just because they don't want to see the big bad keep winning.
Especially against the like scrappy ECU.
Never made it to Omaha.
Omaha. Like it feels just beyond due for an Omaha trip.
Yeah, it's actually like a really cool David versus Goliath. Like never made it to Omaha versus made it to Omaha the most.
Yeah. This is like it's just one of those cases where like no one's gonna say ECU got there cheap if they make it to Omaha this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a really good Texas team that is their offense is clicking, their bullpen is we'll see. But yeah. The other one though that I want to touch on is Tennessee. It feels like there have been a lot of we talked about this a few times though. They're like the new money mad. They like haven't had a ton of baseball success before this. They kind of felt like they got too big for their britches last year, and now they're using that as fuel to make it to Omaha this year, and they're probably going to make it to Omaha, and like the odds are for them to win the entire thing. Like they're probably still my national championship pick. But so they do a lot of things right. They do a lot of things fun, but there are some moments I think that Tennessee makes it hard to root for as a neutral observer. There was a moment this weekend where it was in the game three of their third game of the regional against Georgia Tech, when Jordan Beck hit a double over the center fielder's glove. And as he was sprinting around first base, he threw up the double bird middle finger to the outfielders. and maybe just in a moment of joy, like that's something that you do, but that maybe that's more of like a fan thing to do. I don't know. That's
it also not something doesn't, I want to see. That doesn't feel like the most joyful way of responding to that.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I agree. It seems like it's not something that I would want a player from my team to do, but it seems like a lot of Tennessee fans are taking the villain role by storm this year. I don't know. And a lot of them are saying that maybe this is the best thing that could happen for college baseball. And maybe it's fun to have like a new team be really good, but they're kind of being jerks about it.
Yeah. See, I think for some reason, what Rock Riggio did feels different than what Jordan Beck did. Like, I don't know. I feel like Rock Riggio was just like, for the most part, it felt a little bit friendlier. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I have a good case for that. Maybe it's just some underlying bias against Tennessee that I have. But with that said, I do feel like Tennessee winning a national championship would be good for college baseball. Like, I like it.
I agree.
I like it when there's a villain, but
and I like it when there's new blood too.
Yeah, it adds up. I mean, anytime you see a new fan base get really invested in college baseball, I think that's good for the sport.
Yeah, and it kind of ignites that Vandy Tennessee rivalry a little bit. Like they hate each other in a lot of sports, but Vandy's been better pretty much historically than Tennessee for baseball.
Is a sport where they're actually pretty even in terms of quality of what they put on the field now in the last couple of years. So it's actually like a compared to like their football rivalry or something. Like, I don't know. This feels more like an even rivalry at this point.
Yeah. So that's always fun to introduce new rivalries and all that.
I'm going to add one more villain, and it's not really a great villain, but I think Ole Miss is going to play a little bit of a villain role. So Ole Miss is traveling to Southern Miss in a super, and I don't think anything against Ole Miss, but they were the last team in the tournament. I think some people think they didn't belong, and now they're going to an in-state rival. So I think they're going to, like, there's just going to be a very heated Southern Miss fan base for that one. Like, Hattiesburg is going to be absolutely ridiculous, not necessarily because Ole Miss has bad guys. I think actually it's a fairly likable team, but they're playing that spoiler role a little bit. Maybe that, like, Texas will be playing with ECU. So give me Ole Miss as a team that is going not to be not to be loved by the home crowd.
Yeah, and this is kind of a matchup of I mean, obviously rivals that hate each other and stuff, but neither team has really made the supers that often.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, both of these teams are looking for just like what their second Omaha appearance, for Southern Miss ever, for Ole Miss in the last couple decades. Let's take a stab now at a question that you've already brought up. Only 4 of the 16 teams that are remaining in the bracket have won a national championship. Are we going to get a first-time national champion?
Well, the odds are for us, that's for sure.
Yeah.
If we want to pick that one.
I think the answer is like pretty easy yes, in my opinion. So, I mean, teams that have won a national championship are Texas, Oklahoma, Stanford, and Oregon State. I think it's very reasonable if one of those win a national championship. But if we've been doing that sort of math the whole season of like, would you take Tennessee or the field? And people have been kind of leaning towards the field. But now as the field goes from 64 to 16, are you going to take Tennessee or the field? You still might want to take the field, but if it's now, are you going to take 12 teams that include Tennessee versus 4 teams? I feel like that's an easy pick for me. Like, let's take
That's an easy pick. And I think just going based off of the top 4 seeds that like the top 4 national seeds that are still in, you got Tennessee, Stanford, Oregon State, and Virginia Tech, because those match up on opposite sides of the bracket. One of those, let's say it gets down to those 4 seeds as the semifinals, one of those national champs is on the right, Stanford and Oregon State, are going to knock each other out. So the odds just get a little bit better there. There's only one team two teams with national titles on the left side of the bracket. So I guess it's half. So I don't know. It just feels like the odds are picking for a new national champ. Now, picking who that will be, I don't know.
Yeah, and now let's take a stab at who's going to have a shot at that. Let's pick some winners for Super Regionals. And I want to start off with the top left of the bracket with the number 1 overall seed versus the number 16 regional, which was Georgia Southern. So Notre Dame upset Georgia Southern and Texas Tech in that regional. So we have a Tennessee versus Notre Dame matchup. I think this is an easy pick for probably everyone. Tennessee. What does it take for Notre Dame to beat Tennessee at Lindsey Nelson?
No home runs.
Yeah. So
different baseballs.
Well, an interesting thing is that in the game six that Tennessee had against Georgia Tech to win that regional, they actually didn't hit a home run in that win, and they still won. So, like, it's like, I don't know, it's easy to say that Tennessee is, you know, they win when they hit home runs. Well, they just won a big time postseason game without hitting a home run. Notre Dame, I think you expect from Notre Dame is really good defense, very solid pitching. No one on that pitching staff is going to like strike you as, oh, here's a top prospect, but just like pitchability off the charts for a guy like John Michael Bertrand. So I think that if Notre Dame is going to win, they're going to win games that are like 4-3, where there's just like two or three defensive plays that you're just like, wow, they just stole a run from Tennessee. And maybe you get like a rare booting of a ball from Tennessee that gives Notre Dame a couple runs or something. Like, I think it's going to be one of those games where everything's going to have to go right for Notre Dame to win the series.
Yeah. It's pretty unlikely, but I guess it's possible. Like, you're going to need a gem from John Michael Bertrand and maybe just slightly less good of a game from Dolland or any of the other wonderful Tennessee pitchers.
Yeah. So let's move now to a little bit tougher super to pick. ECU number 8 versus Texas number 9. Who do you got in this one?
Oh, I think I'm going to go with ECU. Texas is turning up at the right time.
And this is in Greenville, North Carolina. So that big time home field advantage in the jungle was rocking, especially during those night games. They did get, I believe, 2 day games in this one. The first 2 games are both going to be day games. So that's a little bit less exciting for the jungle.
Oh, that is true. It's not as fun. But the dream of just for the rivalries, Tennessee or Texas A&M and OU on the same side of the Omaha bracket is still alive. And that would be fun just because of the added salt that, like, you could knock your main rival out in the 0-2 game.
Yeah.
Because neither of those, like, Texas has not beaten Tennessee. So they're going to go to the 0-1 game. And then, yeah.
Texas is 1-0 against Tennessee on the year.
Yeah. That was a different Tennessee team. It's been a long time since that.
I think also it was a different Texas team.
Yeah. That is true.
The bullpen was on fire to start the year, and they have fallen apart since.
Our friend Parker at Stats of War on Twitter has put out some stats and everything and like projected winners based on lots of things. And his models have Texas winning that ECU regional at 66%, like a 66% chance that they win it. I think that's probably a little heavy. Maybe it's just like using the entire season of stats and then it's weighting like Texas bullpen performance. I don't know. It's ECU is just coming off of like a 20 game win streak and they're playing really well right now. I feel like I'm going to go ECU, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think Texas. I feel pretty confident about this pick. If I had to go with relative, you know, some power rankings here, I think Hansen is unbeatable in game one, and I think it's gonna that's gonna give Texas 2 chances to win this, and I think they do. But that said, I picked against East Carolina in the past. I picked against them in this regional. I picked Virginia to win it, and Virginia didn't even make the regional final. So if you're an East Carolina fan listening, take some solace in the fact that I have been wrong about East Carolina before.
And I guess Texas is 13-9 on the road, while ECU is 26-9. So I mean, you play better. You play 26-9 at home. I guess you play better at home than you do on the road, which makes sense. But I would think this is close to 50-50 in my mind. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, or it's kind of funny. It was a trip out to the Carolinas that was basically the beginning of the end of Texas's time at number one. Right, they lost that series to South Carolina and. I think it was a game like the Citadel or something like that too. Like, I think they had a really rough trip to South Carolina, I think. But Carolinas haven't treated Texas so nice this year.
Nope, that is true. This could continue that, but I wouldn't be surprised if Texas won. They have the experience and the depth. But Go ECU, David.
Let's head over now to the pitching optional Super Regional, Texas A&M and Louisville. I fully anticipate a slugfest, which means that we're going to get like a complete game from Mike Vidalis on game one or something like that.
Detmer's so, going game one.
Yeah. Oh, that makes a lot more sense. That's how supers work. Yeah. So who do you have, A&M or Louisville in this one?
I think I have A&M here. Their offense just is so clutch and continue. Like, even if they get shut down by a good pitcher, like Austin Krobe on the regional final came in for TCU and like shut them down, shut this A&M lineup down for like almost six innings, and credit to him, but then they came in and scored 15 in the last three innings.
It was just like I was texting with someone saying, like, you know, this A&M offense is going to have their chances. Like, they are not going to get shut out, and they scored 15 runs in that game that they were just dominated for the first more than half of it. So yeah, it is wild. This is an offense that has carried a team that cannot play defense, that cannot get more than like 1.5 good pitching performances in a weekend. This team, I feel like I want to keep picking against them, but I thought their regional was a little bit light compared to some of the others. Like, I think I've had some complaints about TCU, and now this is a super regional matchup that Louisville's obviously a very talented team, but that's again mostly on the offense. And I think A&M has Detmer, which is, he's a legit guy. I think he's a year away from being a very legit guy. Like, I think next year he'll be really good for A&M. But I don't know. Like, I mean, Louisville's ERA on the year is like 5.5. And this feels like it would be a heavy A&M favorite, but A&M's ERA on the year is what, 4.8 or 9 or something. So it's not like A&M's pitching staff is great, but I feel like these are two offenses that are going to trade punches. And I think A&M will get just a little bit extra pitching.
Yeah, I agree. So we're both picking A&M there.
All right, heading down now to Blacksburg Super with Virginia Tech and Oklahoma. Oklahoma upset, maybe. Florida in the Gainesville Regional. I think that was a really tough draw for Florida. Who do you have, Oklahoma or Virginia Tech?
Why don't you go first?
All right, I'm going Hokies on this one. I think Hokies set up really well for a weekend series. I think that Oklahoma is playing incredibly hot right now. So I would not, this one feels like a coin flip to me. Like, I would not be surprised if we get a couple of Peyton Graham bombs and this ends up going the way of Oklahoma. The one of the biggest factors for me, which is tough, is that Virginia Tech has never been to the College World Series. So this is just not an experience they're used to. But huge advantage to the fact that this is at home. This is just going to be another weekend series against a really good team. And Virginia Tech's done that. I mean, they've beaten Miami in series. They've beaten teams in the ACC all year. And this is a series that I think that is very winnable for Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going Virginia Tech here too. They've been pushed the entire regular season against a really good, really deep ACC. And they're playing at home where they've only lost 5 games all season. So, give me the Hokies. But, like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma can pull this out. I'm just not counting on it.
Yeah, a little quick halftime. There's 5 SEC and 4 ACC teams in the Supers, which I think for a while it felt like there was going to be a lot more SEC teams make it in. And ACC had a pretty good performance in Game 7s to be able to almost even the score with the SEC.
Yeah, and you kind of remember early on in the season, we were talking about how the SEC West seems down this year. There are 4 SEC West teams in the Supers.
Just 1 SEC East team.
Yeah.
Wild how that works. Let's go to the top of the right side of the bracket with Stanford, UConn. I mean, UConn has been dangerously underseeded, and this is a team that's been dominating the Big East. With that said, they have to travel like 12,000 miles to the West Coast for this, changed 3 hours of time zones against the Stanford team that Alex Williams did not have his best start of the year against Texas State, but Alex Williams has been relatively dominant Pac-12 pitcher of the year. I think the offense for Stanford proves to be too much for the Huskies, but this is, I think, going to be a scrappy series.
Yeah. This is, this is the heavy favorite picking Stanford here, so it's like kind of an easier pick, but I guess we kind of maybe lay out the path for UConn to maybe win here. Yeah, if you have Alex Williams have an off day and you got your ace, Austin Peterson or Pat Gallagher or Enzo Stefanoni, they seem like relatively good starting rotation. And if you get like a decent offensive day like that, there is a chance that UConn can take a game maybe by accident and then you win the other one. I don't rule it out, I guess, but it seems like the Stanford team has the offense to just blow up on UConn.
Yeah, I think the weather is going to be a big factor at night in Palo Alto. Ball doesn't fly very well, and you saw a lot of low-scoring games in that Stanford regional, but they did hit back-to-back bombs at the bottom of the ninth at like 11 p.m. or something. So like they still have the power to hit it out of the ballpark at any time. But I think that this regional could end up being, I know their game one is scheduled for like 7:30 local time p.m. So I think this could be a little bit lower scoring depending on the weather there.
I trust Stanford's offense in this one.
Agreed. All right, moving down, North Carolina, Arkansas. I feel like this is a really trendy place for a potential upset pick. Are you going Hogs or are you going the Diamond Heels here?
I'll go Arkansas. I've counted them out. I picked Oklahoma State to win that regional. Their offense is clicking at the right time. Go ahead and give me the Hogs.
Yep, same here. I'm going Arkansas. I think that...
Which means guaranteed North Carolina wins.
Yeah, I mean, Honeycutt was ridiculous. I mean, he just dude in center field, robbed the home run against Georgia to clinch that game. I think Arkansas, the big question mark for Arkansas all year has always been, where is this offense? You have all of these guys that are just like, I don't know, you have Robert Moore and Stovall and these guys that you're just like, why aren't they quite clicking at the rate we think they're going to click at? They did in Stillwater. I mean, the offensive production in Stillwater from the Razorbacks lineup was more than enough to put me at ease, at least for a little while. They had a couple off days between the SEC tournament and that regional, and the way that David Heron talks about it, it just got their heads right. So I think the Arkansas's offense is there. I think their bullpen is probably one of the best, besides Tennessee's, maybe the second best remaining in the tournament. So I think Arkansas is the team to beat in my mind here. Let's go to great state of Mississippi. We got Southern Miss hosting Ole Miss. You before the tournament started, picked Southern Miss to go to Omaha. Are you still leaning Southern Miss?
I am. This matchup lines up better than I could have thought. I thought they were going to have to go up against Miami, and I liked Miami in that regional. I guess I was wrong. But yeah, I think this sets up really well for Southern Miss. They have an amazing pitching staff. I think they were number two in ERA before the postseason started, and I don't know if they still are. I think they are. Yeah, they're number two in ERA, two in WHIP, three in strikeouts per nine, two in wOBA allowed. So they're it's kind of a strength on strength. The Ole Miss's strength is probably offense, just by a little bit. Their ERA is like a good run and a half higher than Southern Miss. So it's probably not that hard to say, but Tim Elko could carry Ole Miss. I don't know. What do you think?
I think Ole Miss is playing better now than they have in a while. And we saw that at the end of the year, Ole Miss was playing better and better. They did lose that series to A&M to finish the year, which was in some way surprising. I think that, you know, they were hot enough that people thought, okay, they're gonna knock off A&M. They didn't. They lose their one game in the SEC tournament, and all of a sudden they become a bubble team. But they made it into the tournament. I think Peyton Chatagnier had a really good regional, which he's been struggling a little bit. I think they figured out the rotation. I am leaning Ole Miss by a hair here. I like Southern Miss a lot, and I would not be surprised, but I don't like this pick. This is probably the toughest one to pick, but I'm going Ole Miss here.
It is hard, yeah. I mean, if Ole Miss plays like the number one team that they used to be earlier in the season,
yeah,
then they can obviously make it to the finals. But I don't know if they can keep this up, especially against this really good Southern Miss pitching staff.
Speaking of good pitching staffs, let's go to the Corvallis Super Regional, where we have 3-14 Auburn, Oregon State. I'm picking the Beavers in this one. I think Jerpy is the best pitcher in college baseball right now, probably. in terms of what he's been able to provide his team. And I think he's going to be a first rounder. So I like what Oregon State has. That's a long way to travel for Auburn, and give me the Beavers.
Yeah, this team sets up really well for a Super Regional round. You need a really good ace and then a second pitcher that is pretty good, and that should be enough for you. And that's what they have. Sonny DeShara is obviously insane. I think he's got an 829 WOBA, if that's right. That's insane. That's an almost one. That's insane.
Yeah. Is there any reason for concern? Oregon State did lose their last two series against Arizona and UCLA. So last time they did regular weekend series, they lost both of them. Is that enough reason to think that they might lose this?
I mean, Auburn is a really good team. They wouldn't be the 13 overall seed, or the 13 seed if they weren't. But they have a really good offense. If they maybe have a bad start from Derpy and don't get what they're kind of just expecting to win Friday night, then yeah, Auburn can win this. But I think you've got this, especially with playing at your home ballpark. It kind of helps root for the home team, like we always say.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, Auburn lost three of their last four series, including a series against Kentucky and then going one and out in the SEC tournament. So it's not like they were dominant down the stretch in their series. Mm-hmm. So I think I want to pause and just take a step out here to say Butch Thompson has got to be one of the best coaches in all of college baseball for what he's been able to do at Auburn. Three Super Regionals now in the last four tournaments, and he lost Brad Bohannon as an assistant coach in that stretch. And he has done something that I did not think possible in the SEC West for any team not named Arkansas or LSU. Like, I mean, it's just very impressive what he's been able to do at Auburn.
Yeah, 100%. Hats off to him. And he might have had a good case for SEC Coach of the Year, if not for Tony Vitello.
Yep, and Schloss.
And Schloss, yeah.
Well, Kyle, let's wrap it up there. Another 4 days of baseball, Friday to Monday, and then we get Omaha.
Yeah, can't wait. Get to watch it all from home and watch all 16 games on Saturday and Sunday. It's going to be great.
All right. Well, enjoy the weekend, and we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening to the College Baseball Nation podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media at collegeballnet and rate and review the podcast wherever you're listening. Head over to our website, collegebaseball.info, for all of our Super Regional coverage. Thanks for listening and have a great week.